Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Memcast. I'm Suhail Abdul Wahab, your host today. Joining with me is Dr. Kam Atwal, who is a consultant in general internal medicine at the University Hospital of Leicester. Today we are going to discuss about hypertensive urgency. So we'll discuss about a journey of a patient with a elevated blood pressure from GP referral till being discharged from the hospital. Hi, welcome to the Memcast today, Dr. Atwal.
Hello.
Nice having you again with us. So we would take you through a journey about a lady, 46-year-old, who had been to a dentist to check her tooth and her blood pressure was assessed to be 198/116. So she was referred to the GP and GP had a chat with her and then asked her to go to the A&E. She's completely asymptomatic and the A&E doctors have seen her, given some amlodipine and sent to medical same-day emergency care. So how would you approach this patient?
First of all, we'll have to see if this is severe hypertension or not. So, funnily enough, there's not really a number definition of what constitutes severely high blood pressure. There's some European guidelines that tend to grade the hypertension based on grade 1, 2, and 3. And grade 3 hypertension is defined by blood pressure above 180 systolic over 120 diastolic. That's traditionally what the kind of patients are referred to an SDEC setting. For example, in this case, with that kind of blood pressure. First of all, we need to differentiate between hypertensive urgency or hypertensive emergency. We've moved away from the old definition and diagnosis of hypertensive crisis, because urgency and emergency, you can then change your management based on their different diagnosis. So hypertensive urgency is defined by a high blood pressure with no end organ damage. Hypertensive emergency is therefore defined by a high blood pressure with end organ damage. So by definition, if a patient has a high blood pressure, think of it in simple plumbing terms. The first thing that would burst in a system which has a high pressure would be the smaller pipes. So just imagine which pipes are the smallest in your cardiovascular system. Three main organs are brain, your coronary arteries, so around your heart, and your kidneys. So those are the three main organs you want to watch out for. So the first of all, I will do a general examination. So neurologically, I will check for any evidence of encephalopathy. So are they drowsy? What is their GCS? Do they have any stroke-like symptoms? I would also think about any symptoms of increased intracranial pressure. So that would ideally involve ophthalmoscopy, looking for papilledema. And while I'm looking at the retina, let's look for any evidence of hypertensive retinopathy, for example, flame hemorrhages. Moving down to the cardiovascular system, checking for symptoms to suggest patient is in pulmonary edema, or if patient is complaining of ischemic sounding chest pain, I would look at the ECG to look for any ischemic changes. And blood tests, for example, a troponin would be very useful in this case to rule out a type 2 MI. Moving down to the kidneys, urinalysis is very useful to pick up any evidence of hematoproteinuria and urea and electrolytes blood test looking for an acute rise in creatinine. So as long as all these tests are normal, then we are safe to diagnose hypertensive urgency rather than emergency. We'll talk later about management because this is the reason why we want to differentiate between the two is because the management is very different. If you imagine if someone has a high blood pressure, but their pipes have not burst, it would have taken much longer for the blood pressure to come up. And quite typically, someone with hypertensive urgency tend to tolerate quite a high blood pressure, whereas in contrast, hypertensive emergencies, you tend to have a slightly lower blood pressure with end organ damage because of this acute rise. So just as the rise has been slower in hypertensive urgencies, you want it to reduce slowly as well.
So that's a good starting point. I mean, as a frontline doctor, junior doctor, especially when they see this kind of high blood pressure, they are sometimes a bit anxious and worried what they would do. I think it's as you explained very well, it's very important to differentiate whether this is really an emergency or an urgency. So as you clearly mentioned about, you know, looking at the endorgan damage, if that has been clarified, no endorgan damage, and then we can conclude that this patient is in hypertensive urgency. So now we look into how to manage this patient in the acute setting, and then we'll move on to a long-term management as well.
Perfect. So in the acute setting, like I said, we want to start blood pressure control. So first of all, from the history and examination, the most common cause of hypertensive urgency tends to be non-compliance to medications. So a careful history and actually asking the patient to restart their normal medications would be the number one best solution. But sometimes you do get these patients who present as newly diagnosed hypertensives who've never really had their blood pressure checked with their GP. In those cases, you want to start them on medications that would slowly bring their blood pressure down. I've noticed quite often that emergency physicians would start patients on things like amlodipine. Now, the problem with amlodipine, sometimes the onset of action is 8 hours, can go up to 72 hours, which is suggested in some literature. In the ESDEC setting, that would be difficult to deal in the same day kind of setting. What we tend to use in our same day emergency care unit has been phenlodipine MR. It's a calcium channel blocker, but it does take 2 to 4 hours for it to start working. So it wouldn't drop the blood pressure too quickly, but low enough that you can see a response before we can discharge the patient. An alternative would be ramipril. Again, it would take 2 to 5 hours for the onset of action. And all we are looking for is a downtrending blood pressure rather than an actual blood pressure target.
I think most of the people are worried at numbers. Usually, you know, even if they have given something to acutely, you know, bring down the blood pressure. So if it is not coming below certain targets, they are worried what to do next. So what's your advice on these situations? For example, a patient came in with a blood pressure about 200 and 120, and then after probably a few hours of one of the medication, is still sitting at 186, let's say 110. It has come down clearly, but still not below the assumed target of 180 by 120 or 110, yeah.
So it's all about treating the patient rather than numbers. So first of all, you can again reassess the patient, make sure they're still asymptomatic. And also another one thing that I forgot to mention earlier is that we should treat the underlying cause of the hypertension as well. Sometimes hypertension is a symptom of other issues. For example, alcohol or drug withdrawal can cause hypertension. Also pain. Quite often these patients would present with a headache and increased blood pressure. Some people think the headache is a symptom of a high blood pressure, but actually it could be the headache that's causing the high blood pressure in the first place. So treating the underlying cause will certainly help. But again, once we ruled out endorgan damage, then generally it's difficult to know how long this patient had this high blood pressure for. So instead of rushing to decrease the blood pressure so quickly, I would be more focused on making sure the blood pressure is going in the right direction, patient has a good safety net, then we can safely discharge. Another concept we need to think about is brain autoregulation. So as you might remember from your physiology lectures many years ago, that autoregulation is your cardiovascular's clever system to try to make sure blood flow is constant as your arterial blood pressure changes. So if you imagine, if over months, weeks to months, your blood pressure has been slowly creeping up, your autoregulation has been creating such a homeostasis that your baseline blood pressure might actually be, let's say, 160 over 100. Now imagine in those kind of patients, if you try to force them to bring down their blood pressure down to something below 160 over 90, then that can cause patients to feel lightheaded or even collapse. So you have to think about, instead of treating the numbers, think about treating the patient.
Okay, thank you for that explanation. I think so what I can understand from the explanation that even if you are unable to achieve a target, if it is in the improving trend, probably you can discharge the patient from same day emergency care. And if you're really concerned, you can probably review next day or ask the patient to keep monitoring blood pressure and then review in a couple of days' time if everything is in the right direction. Is that something you would recommend for junior doctors?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
In terms of causes like non-compliance or first presentation of underlying hypertension, which is not diagnosed, do we need to explore secondary causes in every patient, or is there any specific cohort of patients that we need to explore?
So, yes. So in these patients, there's a particular cohort where you would want to investigate for secondary cause of hypertension. So what we're talking about is, you know, primary hypertension is what we would identify as an idiopathic hypertension. Secondary causes are any conditions that hypertension might be a symptom of, rather than a single diagnosis. So the patient cohort would be typically a younger patient under the age of 40, someone with a rapid onset of hypertension, and, you know, someone who's had a history of very well-controlled blood pressure with a sudden change in blood pressure reading, even despite being on the correct antihypertensive treatment. And also patients who are resistant to multiple antihypertensives, it is also worth thinking about secondary hypertension in this kind of patients as well.
So we talked about to look for secondary causes. We also explained one of the reasons for people to come up with the hypertensive urgency is resistant hypertension. Would you like to explain a bit more about what it is and what should we do?
So resistant hypertension is by definition an above goal elevated blood pressure despite the use of three concurrent antihypertensive drug classes. So when we talk about drug classes, we're talking about calcium channel blockers, ACE inhibitors or ARBs, and or diuretics. So when you've got three different drug classes, despite that, if the blood pressure is still high, then by definition is a resistant hypertension. At this time, you should then consider, like I said earlier, about secondary hypertensive causes. Non-adherence is quite common, unfortunately, in this case, and also white coat hypertension. One way to battle white coat hypertension is to ask the patient to record their blood pressure regularly, either daily or even twice a week, at home in their comfortable environment, and see if the blood pressure is stable at home but higher in a healthcare setting. Remember, whenever a patient comes to hospital, they haven't come there because everything is well. It's likely that they'll be worried about their medical condition. So naturally, their blood pressure will be higher than their baseline. One other thing to consider is, are you measuring the blood pressure properly? If you've got the wrong cuff size, for example, the cuff size is too small, that can give you a falsely high blood pressure reading. Also, if you look at all the textbooks, they would suggest you should take a blood pressure when a patient's lying flat in a quiet room, and it should be three different blood pressure readings, and you take an average of those three. Now, you can imagine in a busy SDEC, A&E, or a ward setting, that'd be quite difficult. But that is also something worth looking into if you are worrying about resistant hypertension.
Thank you for today's discussion. I think we discussed about hypertensive urgency and emergency, how to differentiate and what sort of an approach we should undertake in such patients. And we also looked into instances where we need to look for secondary causes. And we briefly discussed about resistant hypertension and other factors which may be contributing for high blood pressure without any significant underlying pathology. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Athwal.
I hope you guys found this episode useful. Don't forget to check out our Instagram page, mem.cast, for question of the week. See you next time.